Good morning, good morning. Welcome to Daily Drop-In, where the Teach Better team is live every single morning, Monday through Friday. It is Tuesday, October 12th, and we are so thrilled to be talking about mastery learning, bringing you some good news articles, and the one and only Andrea is with us. So you know it's going to be a good show. We are hoping that we give you some positivity, some tactical takeaways, some interesting strategies that you can consider implementing in your classroom even as early as later today. So make sure that you go fill up your coffee, because that's most important. Hop in the comments to say good morning, and we'll be right back for some good discussion. Good morning. Good morning, Andrea. The comments are already filling up the fact that you're on screen this morning. So you know it's going to be a good one when everyone's this excited.
It's all the ambassadors. The Breeze are here. So exciting.
Good morning, everyone. Good morning, everyone. I know you like know who we are, but Andrea, just for like, I don't know, just for giggles, will you introduce yourself?
Of course. I'm Andrea Kolchbrenner, and I'm part of the Teach Better team. Megan Deegan-Hosey, actually I should say her new name now, are the Ambassador Program Coordinators. So we get to work with fabulous educators from literally all across the world. And I'm also a seventh grade English language arts teacher.
You also run our academy.
Title. Yeah. So I also help out with the academy, more in the back end. So you don't really see me at home, but everybody on the team sees me a lot.
Like literally, guys, like Andrea within the past few months has taken over our Teach Better Academy. And if you're not familiar with the Teach Better Academy, head to teachbetteracademy.com and you are going to see a ton of self-paced educator courses or, you know, like there's like for teachers, they're for administrators, they're for coaches, they're for everybody. And in these courses, we really needed somebody on the team to help us get these up and going. And Andrea has really kicked us in the butt. We have a course coming out like every 30 days now. So I love that you not only run the ambassador program with Megan, but you guys created the ambassador program on the Teach Better team. And then after that, trying to foster and manage an entire community within the Teach Better family, you're like, oh yeah, guys, and I'll make sure that the academy is up and running. And then all of us, you hold us all accountable. Like, you're the boss on the team is really what it is.
Oh, wow.
So fun. Also, you, for whatever reason, and I love this about you, you also have, like, the kids of the Teach Better team. Like, everybody on the Teach Better team seems to have their own family dynamic. But for whatever reason, Andrea, your children are like the kids of the Teach Better family.
I know, baby Luke and now baby Lily.
I know, it's just so fun. So I'm thrilled that you're here. Obviously the comments are super stoked that you're here this morning. But it was a perfect setup to be able to talk shop with you for mastery learning and get it. We'll get into all that later, but really good to see all of you this morning. How's your week been so far? It's Tuesday. Like, I mean, a lot of teachers were off school on Monday. Did you do anything fun this weekend, Andrea?
It was more of a chill weekend, which I gladly welcomed because the last couple weekends have been so busy. Being in Chicago, though, and I am a White Sox fan, so it was an exciting Sunday night. We are still in the playoffs. We had a crazy game. We were supposed to play again yesterday, but we had some storms here in Chicago, so I'm excited for today.
Thank you for that update, because I updated the world, the Teach Better family, on the Sox yesterday. I had literally like two tidbits of information. I shared it and I knew they were supposed to play last night and I totally forgot to check. So the game got canceled?
Yeah, just because of this potential for storms. And I don't know what all the rules are with like playoff baseball. If you can start the game, I think they just really want to be able to finish it. Yeah. So today, do or die again. We'll see.
This is a big day. Yeah, we did have huge storms and tornadoes. Hopefully for those of you in the Midwest, hopefully you stayed safe. Obviously, if you need anything, please feel free to reach out. We'd love to be there to support you. But Adam's making fun of me saying, Ray knows her baseball. Andrea, literally all I knew was that the Sox were in Chicago and that they won on Sunday, which was a big deal. That's what I knew.
It was literally like the longest game. So speaking of the academy, I was working on academy tasks during the game. So I had messaged the team and I was like, okay, if I made any mistakes, please forgive me. There was a really exciting baseball game on in the background. The kids were sleeping. Kyle was playing video games and I'm like yelling, like, what? No. Because it was one of those games where it was back and forth. Like we'd be up and then the Astros would answer. We'd be back up again. And then we just started killing them. It's
pretty awesome. Okay.
I know we have Texas fans in the house. So I'm sorry. But right now it's go Chicago.
I was going to say both of us are in Chicago. So I typically wouldn't go White Sox, but for the sake of this argument, absolutely White Sox all the way, go Chicago. And I think it's so funny, Andrea, you actually sound like a real fan. Like you probably know the rules of the game and everything.
There's a bat, Ray, and a ball, and you have to hit it.
Yeah, see, I know that one isn't the orange ball. It's the white ball with the stitches in it. I'm getting better, Adam. I'm telling you I'm getting better, but I love it.
Megan's ripping right now. Do you see her in the comments? She's a Cubs fan. Now, when the Cubs were in the World Series a couple years ago, I did support that. I watched the games. Mm-hmm. I was sad it wasn't my team, but I was not a hater. But there's a lot of Cub haters out there that are not happy the White Sox are doing so well.
No, I'm gonna be open-minded. I'm excited for the White Sox. I think there's a lot to be celebrated here. Today's the big game. So tomorrow on Daily Drop-In, we'll have to update our Teach Better family in case you guys aren't avid baseball watchers. I'm thrilled that we really should have a sports section of the Daily Drop-In morning show.
I'll text you right tomorrow morning so you know if they won or not.
That will be awesome. Thank you for that. See, you're always got my back, Andrea. I appreciate you. So this morning we are getting into a topic, obviously mastery learning is something that you and I have talked about for ages, but before we get into all that, you kind of got into mastery learning, your avenue of learning about it was different than mine. Was it Megan that introduced it to you? What's your story with that topic? Like just how did you get connected to the team, I guess, more than anything else?
Sure. So obviously, as all of us as teachers, we're always, you know, trying to get that mastery, trying to figure out how we can get our students to learn the content the best way possible. So Megan had started dabbling with mastery learning, but she just really kind of needed something like a structure, like a format for it. And she found the team back when it was still the grid method. And she started telling me about it because we worked together. She was math and I'm ELA. And you know, right away, as us teachers always do, I'm like, oh, that won't work for me. I totally see it for math. I just don't think that framework would work for ELA. She's like, I think you should take a look at it. So we had the opportunity to go and actually visit Ray down at her school. So that was really exciting. And I was like, all right, I can totally do this. So it was supposed to just be one unit. I was going to start small. And so I did with one class. And then I was like, what am I doing? I'm doing it all. So yeah, I started doing some training with the grid method and kind of ran away. And here I am.
I love it. You know, Andrea, your story is really funny because I think a lot of us have that same approach where we get to know about something and we're like, oh, that would make sense. It just won't work for me, whether it's because of my student population or the content I teach or anything in between. And then your journey of trying it, seeing it modeled for you, and then really your first time you were like, okay, I'm just going to do this once. And that mindset kind of gave you the freedom to say, okay, now it's not as much high stakes. Like I'm just going to try this once. And if I hate it, I'll never do it again. That is kind of like the direction I want to take our discussion this morning for our brainstorm bank, is because we're talking about how to get started in mastery learning. And sometimes the first way to get started is to just have a casual mindset as you walk into something new. So we're going to be right back. We're going to transition here into our brainstorm bank, and then we'll get into some of those suggestions. All right, everyone, you know how our brainstorm bank works. This is an intentional time every single morning where we just kind of pause and say, hey, family, seen anything. We get to do Brainstorm Bank every single day on the Daily Drop-In. And on Tuesdays and Thursdays, we like to kick off our mornings with it. And we conclude with our good news stories and holidays, which there sure are a lot to celebrate this morning. Andrea, your kind of explanation of how you got started in mastering learning, I think is so interesting because all of us get started in different ways. But I too kind of had the approach like, I'm only doing this for a short period of time. I don't think this is really going to work. I see a lot of gaps and hurdles with this, but like, I'm willing to try something once. And I think that it's interesting that you shared your mindset was like, oh, I'm just going to do this once. And then your mindset seemingly shifted as you got into it, which is totally okay. I think sometimes we get in this mindset that we need to like go all in. And if it doesn't work, then we have failed. And I think with mastery learning specifically, the mindset of, hey, I'm going to do this once. And if I hate it, I will ask more questions, dive deeper, see if I can tweak anything, or I'll just stop. Like, and that's okay. What's your thoughts on that?
Oh, definitely. I mean, again, as teachers, we're always looking for, you know, something new, right? But that can also be overwhelming, right? Like, oh, especially with a year like this year, well, past 2 years, 2.5 years now with teaching during a pandemic. I can't put something new on my plate because I'm dealing with this. But if I didn't have the grid method and that mastery learning framework while teaching through the pandemic, I literally don't know what I would have done. Because when we ended in March of 2020 now, it seems like so long ago, we left for spring break and we never came back. My students already had that mastery grid framework. So we were able to continue our learning, obviously very different, but a large majority of our class didn't change. The kids kept working through their grids. So I was so relieved that I had that already in place. And then I was able to teach my students it the next school year. We started off remote and we were remote all the way until January. And I thought, phew, good thing my kids last year knew how to learn it already, the grid. It's not going to work if I had new kids. It did, right? Because I was like, well, I have to try it. So definitely always tell that voice in your head it's not going to work. Quiet it. Push it aside. Give it a try. We're here to help. You can make it work.
Well, and I think that's important because obviously in this show this morning and all week long, we really want to talk like about the hard stuff with mastery learning. Like, how do you actually get started? We don't just necessarily want to talk about this like philosophical mastery learning, being able to reach all learners. Like, yeah, we believe in it. We'll do that if that's what you guys want to talk about. But really, what are the strategies? What's the tips that like made a huge difference in us being successful? Like, this week is all about really trying to help our Teach Better family try something and be really strong in it when they make that shift. But the reality is, just to confirm with all of you, like, we have seen the grid method be successful in every single K-12 classroom and every single content area. Now, I don't think that I've ever been in a classroom where it looks the same class to class, because the reality is teacher style and student population and, you know, like access to resources, all those things kind of like tweak a little bit how you would implement mastery learning. And I actually really love that, to be honest. Like, I think it's great that no teacher does it the same, but they all have these like core value, these roots that it comes from. But if you're listening now and you're not familiar with the grid method or the mastery framework, or even just mastery learning as in general that we're talking about today, like, just keep in mind that you may be skeptical and we welcome that, because those questions are going to foster discussion and us being better together. But we really have seen it work. So this isn't coming from a place of like guessing. Like, Andrea and I literally for the team get to go into schools and work with educators all across the US and in Canada to be able to say, okay, let's problem solve. So it's just kind of cool to be able to brainstorm with an educator, knowing that these core roots that, you know, come from that mastery learning concept can evolve and grow into something beautiful, regardless of the classroom you foster. So anyway,
and so many times too, I know I've talked with teachers and I noticed myself, you're probably already doing it. You're just doing it in a different way. So I used to always, let's say a group of students, scored below a 70% on an assessment. I pull them over to a small group. I do a reteaching, right? And then they would, test again. It was just, I was like, oh, I already do that. But now it was setting it up in a different way. So don't always think that it's something brand new. You're probably doing components of it. It's just a matter of now tweaking it.
Oh my gosh. Okay. I'm not going to grab it, but there's a book here that I always reference for grading for, it's called The 15 Fixes. And it's like 15 different things that you can do to adjust your grading. And the concept is, of the 15, you probably already do like two of them. And then you could choose to do one more and one more and one more. I feel like we need that for mastery learning, because so often, Andrea, I'm talking to a teacher and I'm like, you already do 70% of what we already are preaching. Like, and it's really hard to see that, I guess, when you're like walking into something new. But more often than not, the shift is really in kind of like the classroom management component. Yeah. But the design, the scaffolding, the mindset, the intention, that's just like good teaching that a lot of our Teach Better family already have like not only chosen to do, but have mastered. So
for sure.
I do want to say good morning to Jillian. Jillian is in the comments this morning. Jillian, it's so good to see you. It's so nice to see you commenting bright and early. I hope that your weather's good and you're enjoying
it. I'm sure it is.
I know. Florida, it's got to be nice there today, right? Tuesday, October 12th. It's got to be pretty. So you started looking at mastery learning and you were in a writing class at the time, writing and reading or just writing?
Yeah, both. So reading and writing. Yep.
Both. Okay. So I won't lie to you, and this isn't helpful to our audience, but I think this is so easy to implement in a writing course. And reading, I always struggle because it was never a subject area that I understood how to like teach successfully. It's probably my weakest area. For those of you who know my background, just reading is my weakest area as my own, you know, knowledge base as well. But how does that work? How did you facilitate the grid in a reading and writing classroom? Were there two separate grids? Were they incorporated? How'd that work?
Sure. It kind of depended. So I was kind of learning as I went as well. So ultimately, you know, before the grid, I always combined reading and writing. It wasn't like we had one period, wasn't a double block where one period was reading, one period was writing, but I was the same teacher. It literally was just an English language arts 60-minute block. So I haven't had to look at and see, well, how did I usually set up my classroom? And now how can I change it? So there were some units that, or some grids that were just strictly writing, but then I was doing other reading stuff that wasn't a part of the grid. And then there were times where I was able to combine both. And those were my favorite grids. And then as I went on getting more familiar, they were more combined. So I would say I started off being more separate because I just wasn't sure how to do it. And then the more familiar I got, I was like, well, reading, I mean, I'm already having them, they're reading something and writing about it. Well, let me combine those standards. So I had to go in and look and see, okay, well, what writing standard am I assessing here? So when you do set up the mastery learning, I feel like it makes you a better teacher because you're really looking at that nitty gritty. So we always have our kids, well, write something about what you read. Okay, well, what am I really assessing? Then when I stopped and looked at it, I'm like, oh, well, here they can totally do, you know, pull in an argumentative standard with this, you know, reading piece that I gave them. So yeah, so they were more separate, but then definitely meshed their way together.
I like your approach where you were getting into it and giving yourself permission to like not know the answer, like not, oh my gosh, I have to put these together in one grid, but you saw the concept of mastery learning. You were learning about the mastery learning framework of your choice. You were using the grid method, which, you know, we're all biased to use. And as you got into it, it was like, it was okay that you didn't put the subject areas together. It was okay that you were only trying it once or wanted to see how it fit with your students. And as you developed, you either chose to keep that the same and keep them separate or occasionally put them together and be able to see those connections. I think that continual reflection is kind of the beauty of implementing something new anytime throughout the year.
Oh, definitely. I mean, one of my argumentative grids, the first two levels were more focused on reading. So where we were, so it was modeling. So we were looking at finding an article and tracing the argument. Then levels 3 and 4 then were them creating their own argument. So there's definitely ways of even splitting the grid within different levels.
Yeah. So let's look at a little bit. For those of you who are eager to learn about the grid method in like some sort of official capacity, there's a ton of stuff over at teachbetter.com/the-grid-method. It's literally all the grid method junk together. But Andrea, what I like about what you just shared is the like development of what a unit can look like in a grid. And so as you're thinking through your levels or designing different learning opportunities for students, how was the development of a grid similar to your lesson design that you were already doing before the grid method was even a thing in your life?
Sure. Well, level one is, you know, your lowest level. So that would be focusing on your DOK level one. So a lot of your, you know, right there questions back to the QAR days. And a lot of that would be like my background information. So I would always do some type of like anticipatory set. You know, I would try to find, let's say, a vocabulary video or an ed puzzle tutorial. Those really became the basis of my level one, so that students could always go back and refer to it as they're working through the other levels. So all my like beginning unit stuff kind of goes into level one. What do they have to know to be successful as they progress through the levels?
Well, and just to pause you there, that seems like what we all would do in any lesson, right? You're like going over, kind of solidifying what's the background knowledge, what's the vocabulary, what's like the common language we need to use before we actually like dive into making connections between those concepts.
Yep. Exactly. Yeah. And then level two would be more, I always call that like the, you know, the I do, we do, right? Level two, now they're starting to try it out, but I'm, you know, we're still there, still doing things together. And then three and four is more the, okay, show me what you know now. Now that we've gone through this, now it's your turn to do the creating.
Well, and I think that's so wonderful because your description there is truly how we do that gradual release in our classrooms constantly. Anytime you're releasing a new concept to your students, you're kind of doing the hand-holding, the modeling, you try, you do it on your own and get feedback, and then you take it and kind of run with it. And that model is not only relevant in writing and reading, but in all subject areas, because the expert in the room, the teacher, needs to kind of slowly introduce these concepts. The difference is that in one methodology where you're maybe leading in a more traditional classroom, you're deciding the pacing of that slow, gradual release. And with the grid method, the students are kind of dictating that pacing based on how successful they're being kind of along the way, like in those checkpoints. I kind of think of it as a treasure map. I don't know if that's fair, but.
No, it totally is true. And the my students who, you know, already maybe have that background knowledge with being reading, I think that's probably where some of your concerns came, Ray, because reading, it's not like in when you're teaching math, right? We're going to learn a whole new concept. I've never learned how to do this equation before. With reading, we're constantly building on those same standards that they've been doing. From, you know, kindergarten up, we're focusing on main idea, but it just looks different in the seventh grade classroom as it does in a third grade classroom. So I think that's, you know, part of it. But then my students who already have mastered that, they can fly through level one, show me that they know it when they get to the end of that level, go on to level two, where I can take my time with the other students who are still struggling with that concept. That's my favorite part of the mastery learning, is that my students who already have mastered that content aren't bored. They're not sitting there like this, or they're not worse, you know, misbehaving because they are bored. They're able to fly. And like you said, they love to find that treasure. So I had some students, level five for me is my like enrichment extra bonus. Like now you can really dive in. And some of them could not wait to get there. I'm like, slow down. I'm like, I have to check your stuff. Cause they just, they saw it as their treasure. They could not wait to get to that, you know, part. Cause that part I never really set. They got to tell me how they wanted to do it. So they, maybe it was making a video. Maybe it was, you know, doing some kind of creating a play. I had a one student, everything we did, she did a reader's theater for. Like she just loved, she's going to be a playwright one day. That was always her level five to show me what she knew. But yeah, those students really loved that treasure aspect of it.
So you touched on a few things that I want to make sure you like get started with. One is that not every student goes all the way to the top of the grid. Like the minimum expectation that the students work through is that they get to the depth of knowledge that the standard requires them to reach. So if your standard has your students creating or applying the information, it's going to land in a different depth of knowledge. And we could dive into depth of knowledge. If you're listening right now and you're like, ooh, tell me more, Andrea and I can totally get into that. But in theory, what we love, what I love about the grid method, what you've articulated thus far, is that your students are kind of going to get to different spots in the grid, and that's okay, because some of your students are going to get to enrichment, some of them are just going to meet that minimum expectation, but that minimum expectation is mastering the concept that you want them to master. So it is a massive win. The other thing you touched on was the opportunity for students to kind of like not be bored and misbehave, which is absolutely a great classroom management tool. If you have students who are bored or they feel like their time's being wasted, it's harder to continue to re-engage them slowly but surely. But when they can dictate what they're working on, you're kind of engaging them in a different mentality. So I'd love to kind of transition this to a discussion around if an educator is listening right now, what can they do right this moment to like dip their toe into mastery learning? And I think we should start teeny, teeny, tiny, because if there's somebody listening that wants to go all in, head over to teachbetter.com/thegridmethod. There's literally endless resources there on how to dive in. But if you had to give a strategy that was like today, if they were going to try something, or maybe they're going to try something on Monday, not overwhelming. We all have enough going on. Like, what's the teeny tiny thing they could look at?
The first thing would be, I would say, pre-test your students. You don't know what they know until they show you that. So for example, let's say I wanted to teach the elements of plot. I might find a Kahoot, do one of those Kahoot homework games, and put in my main concepts that I wanted them to know. So plot, exposition, rising action, those types of things. If you have students who score, let's say whatever you set it to be, above an 85%, above a 90, okay, figure out, all right, now that they know what a simile is and a metaphor, but can they write their own? Can they identify it in reading? Then those students can move on. So I would say pre-test first, and that's something simple that you usually can already find pre-made, or just quick make it up yourself. And then you might be really surprised, because even some concepts that you think, oh, they don't know this yet, there's probably a handful of kids in your class who do, and then you can start, taking them on from there. So I would say pre-test is the first thing.
You know, it's interesting, when I started my journey, pre-testing was something that was required by my district before I even learned about what mastery learning was. And I always found that pre-testing was like a waste of my time, because I would literally collect all this information that my students were in all these different places and knew different things, but then I didn't have like the next step. Like,
you go back to the beginning anyways. Like, well, we're all going to learn what plot is anyways.
Right. And so it was like funny, like my district was like, you have to pretest. Here's the common assessment pretest. Here's the common assessment post-test. Mm-hmm. And at the time I was like, that makes sense. That's best practice. I will pretest. But then I literally would like be looking through this pretest and be like, okay, all this is garbage. I'm putting in the recycling because, okay, great. All my students are in different spots. They, all should be working on different elements and they all made different mistakes. I guess we'll just do a blanket like thing and hope that I catch them up. And do you know what I mean? It was like, I didn't have the step after the pretest, and that made it really tricky.
Sure. And the students are aware of that too. That's one of the first things that my students will tell me, because they've been pretested before, right? And especially in math, a lot of times they are. And some of them will get anxiety. Like, I didn't know anything on that pretest. I'm like, perfect. Now I get to teach it to you. Mm-hmm. Then I have other kids that are like, that was so easy. I knew all of it. Like, and they'll already get that look. Like, I'm going to learn something I already know. And I'm like, that's amazing. Here's this. And they're like, wait, I get to do something different. Like, yeah. And like, I have like a pass they usually would get, like, congrats, you get to skip to level 2 or whatever the next thing might be. Mm-hmm. And they get so excited, because I think they are so used to it. Here's this task. Here's boring work. I have to do this pretest. It's not going to matter. Who cares what I get? It doesn't go in the grade book. But now when you set up this mastery framework, they're like, oh, okay. Yeah. And a lot of times they'll write me notes too. Like, okay, I know I've learned this, but I don't quite remember. Can I still skip a level? Like, no. It's like, but you'll probably be able to go faster through the level than somebody else who was like, I've never heard of, rising action.
Did you ever, when you were starting with the grid, or even maybe during COVID, because that's the first time I did it, but did you ever do like mini grids where you like only did like Monday through Friday, or did like 2 weeks, like, yeah, not the whole thing where it's like 5 levels, full unit, but like midi, bite size, whatever?
Yeah, my ethics grids were my baby grids. So like, it would just be like each, like level 1 would be like micro, level 2 would be macro. So it's not like I was building on micro the whole time, because it's such a small, word part. So yeah, I definitely would do and they liked it. They're like, can we have one of those baby grids? It was hard during the pandemic, because I used to do a baby grid with the main grid, and that was too much with remote learning. So I just stuck to one. But when we were in the full classroom, we would do a baby grid and then a full grid together.
Well, it's funny because when I was teaching during the pandemic in 2020, I would like only do a grid at a time because I felt like I didn't know what the world was going to look like 2 days later, much less 6 days later. And I liked the opportunity to like give students stuff to do at home. They could ask questions. It gave us the ability to conference on so many different topics, but it was truly like Monday through Friday. And I didn't necessarily grade anything in it. I mean, that was like grading was completely irrelevant during that time, but like I had intentional checkpoints where students were touching base with me about a concept. And it was literally like Monday learning an idea. Like it was interesting. Like, okay, so I had typically like five boxes because I was essentially like, okay, a box a day, typically, depending on what we're learning. It's not perfect, but that's kind of where I was at. And in each box, it was introducing an idea, practicing an idea, and then evaluating if you understood the idea in some way, shape, or form, like some sort of formative assessment. And so depending on what we were working on, like Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, they were getting these like small bite-sized mini lessons, small practice opportunities, and then they were able in so many different capacities in that formative assessments to like conference with me or get direct feedback on their work. And so they were able to kind of still progress in their learning even during a very chaotic time. I know a lot of teachers are still using that method right now.
Oh, for sure. I think that's something we haven't really touched on too much yet is that constant check-in, right? So at the end, typically at the end of each one of my levels, either was a Google Form check-in, mostly Google Forms when we were remote learning. But then once we're in person, it's usually just a check-in with me. Come meet me at the table. Show me what you know. But that's something, too, that a lot of my students weren't used to. They're like, so you're going to check me before I take the test? I'm like, well, yeah. I'm like, does it make sense for me to check you after you take the test if you have no idea what's going on? And they're like, yeah, it doesn't make any sense. That's what we always do, right? They're so used to taking the test. And that's what I used to do. They take the test. I would do some formatives, obviously, here and there. And then if they didn't do well, then I would go back and do reteaching. But why do it after the fact? I love how the mastery framework lets me check in with them before they even get to that summative. So I know before they even get to level four, who I need to do small group, you know, reteaching with, who just needs me to go over something again. And then the parents know more too, because then when I do contact home, I could say, well, levels one, two, and three took them a long time to go through. No, you just had so much more feedback. And I felt like I truly knew what they knew faster and more effectively than before.
Well, and it's that opportunity to talk to students. Like that was my thing. And I know that I'm different. You know, every teacher has their own story, their own journey, how they get into education. But I really didn't like the content I was teaching. I mean, I love teaching math and I taught science, I taught writing. I mean, I love different subject areas, but I really never got into teaching because I was like, math's amazing. I can't wait to teach math every day. And so the opportunity that this gave me freedom to, yes, design rigorous and you know, dynamic learning opportunities, really more so though, allowed me the time to interact with kids. I mean, I always felt like when I was in the front of the classroom, I was talking at 30 pairs of eyes, but then the bell would ring. And whether we did an activity during the mini lesson or not, they'd leave. And I'd be like, I really didn't have a single moment to like even say hi to Andrea or even like, like touch base with Melanie in my classroom because she looked like she was working. So I didn't want to bother. You know, it's like versus with the grid, because students are working at their own pace. Sometimes they're working collaboratively. Sometimes they're conferencing with you. Like you just get opportunities to like pause from the school stuff and like focus on the human being in front of you. And like, I don't know, that was just a different approach for me in the classroom.
Oh, for sure. And I can say the same thing in front of the classroom as I do with a small group of students, and it's going to come across completely differently. Like I've had students when I, because usually I think like you would do, right, we'd have a 5-minute mini lesson, you know, before we would get into grid time. And then I might go and redo that same mini lesson one-on-one with the student. They're like, oh, that totally makes sense now. And again, because you're engaging them in a more one-on-one capacity, there's less distractions. It's just, you get to have such a more personal connection with them. And I can see their mistakes faster, right? So again, if they're all working at their desk It might look like they're all doing it, even if I have them using whiteboards, right? Do a quick scan and see. I might miss those one or two students who didn't. If you're sitting right in front of me, I'm going to see it. And a lot of the students like loved that. Like when we did switch then to remote learning in March, that was, I would have them do like a Google form check-in, like, okay, what's working with how this is going remotely? What can I fix? And a lot of them said that, like, I just miss you. Like, you're still here, but like, I miss you checking me, you know, because they did get used to me constantly, you know, checking off their checklists and initialing it, you know, so the kids really respond well to it.
Well, and this concept I've used so many times. I've been in classrooms all over, especially even I've been in classrooms of even the teachers in the comments who have decided, okay, I'm going to do a mix of this, or I'm going to do a mini lesson. I'm going to do a formative assessment right away. And then I'm going to break my students into different groups. And it's usually three groups, right? The students that really already know it, they get enrichment. The students who need more practice in what our mini lesson on, they have their group. And then the students that are totally missing the ball, they're my struggling learners, they're going to go do something else, and I'm going to work with that group. And that, in theory, is kind of like differentiating. It's kind of headed in the right direction, but it does feel different in that environment because you're labeling students quickly, you're putting them into groups. And typically you're only working with those struggling learners, and the other students are either continuously working on the work that you introduced or they're doing enrichment. And I feel like the pressure of needing to support them and get those struggling learners back on track was like, okay, you got 20 minutes to do that before we end our class time. Versus in this environment, I just feel like it's so much more free and fluid, and I had time to work with all of the students because they needed me during different times. And my struggling learners were students that could then move out of that label more quickly because they got my attention. Like you were saying, like they talk to you because you're the expert educator. You're the one that knows how to take a student and facilitate reflection for them to make growth. Like that's the beauty of our job, right? So,
yeah. And I know some people, you know, have said like, well, how do students interact with each other? So much more. So my students, and I know a lot of teachers that use the grid do the same thing. I have student mentors. So once a student, let's not even get to level four, but let's say they've, you know, have excelled past level one, they can now be a student mentor for somebody else in level one as they're working through level two. And as we all know, the best, how you truly know you learn something is if you can teach it to somebody else. So I've had students before who, you know, they passed at level one, but now they're trying to explain it to a classmate and they're like, oh, maybe I didn't know that as much as I thought I did. And they'll actually go back to level one and they're like, you know, I think I need to re-go over a couple of things. Now that I'm restating it to somebody else, I'm a little confused, or I think I need to brush up on that. So it's a really interactive way for students to be reaching out and, you know, being accountable with each other.
Yeah, no, I love a fun classroom. Those are my so exactly. Fun.
Organized chaos. That's what I always say. And I love exactly. When somebody would come in my room and like they couldn't find me. They'd be like, wait, where is Coach Runner? Because I'm like in the corner sitting on the floor and everybody's like talking and doing something. They're like, oh, I didn't even see you over there. I'm like, oh.
Yeah, because you're not the only teacher in the room. Yep. If you had one suggestion, because again, this week is all about like, yes, we'll talk mastery learning. Yes, we'll take questions from our comments, of course, but like, if you wanted to give people one takeaway to consider today or this week and exploring mastery learning or trying to find ways to really personalize students' experiences in the classroom, what would be your one suggestion to get started?
I don't know. Now I have to narrow it down to one.
Which one?
I would say focus on like one concept first. I think sometimes a misconception would be, well, I need to do mastery learning for, you know, how to write a narrative. That's huge, right? Why don't you start on mastery learning for how to write a lead, you know, or mastery learning for how to, you know, find the main idea. So I would say narrow down your concept first, pick your one standard, and then move on from there and do little chunks, bite size.
I love that bite-sized chunk. And then like, let us know how it goes. Like so many educators, I think, are like, oh, I did this, but I ran into a hurdle and it got challenging. Like you should know this shift is a challenge. It's absolutely a different way of teaching. It's a different way of facilitating a room. It's a different way of carrying a mindset of learning. Like, just let us know. If you run into a hurdle, that doesn't mean you have to stop, but be willing to brainstorm. We would love to brainstorm with you. And so I love that concept of like a bite-sized piece, because I think that will allow you to slowly but surely start reflecting and tweaking. And that's really the best part of all this, is being able to reflect and tweak to better serve our students. So super good, Andrea. I think we should get into our good news story and the holidays that we have today. So should we transition here?
Sounds good.
All right, we'll be right back. All right, guys, good morning. It is Tuesday, October 12th, and we are going to conclude our time together with our good news story. As you guys know, on Tuesdays and Thursdays, we love to end our day with some positivity, some holiday celebration. Andrea, it's been so fun to be able to talk shop with you like all day today, and obviously all the time because we're able to work together. But like, it's so wonderful to be able to go back to kind of where this all started. You and I used to just talk mastery learning constantly have that reflection. It's been really fun so far in the show being able to give people little nuggets to consider and give them permission to start really, really teeny tiny and slowly reflect from there. And if it turns into doing a huge mastery grid, great. And if it doesn't, like, any little bit is a step in the right direction towards carrying a progressive classroom. And so we would love to be part of any journey, no matter how quickly or whatever you dive in. It's just always so fun. But Andrea, we love to be able to bring some good news stories and holidays to all of you. So should we start with holidays?
Yes, definitely.
All right. So some weird holidays today, and I don't mean to like label them as weird, but really like holidays that I never knew were as a thing. So it's National Face Your Fears Day. So Andrea, I need to be able to celebrate that by having you tell me a fear that you have.
Oh, for sure. I was going to say, we have to share our fears now in the comments. Jump in. Yeah. Well, I'm going to do two. So one fear that I had that I faced, though, so on, I don't like heights. So like, I don't like roller coasters. I just, like, I know I'm not going to die off of it, but like, I just, it gives me anxiety. I don't like it. So on my honeymoon, we went to Costa Rica, and you're in the rainforest. So what do? Zip lining. And I had peer pressure from Kyle and another couple that we had met who are like our two of our best friends now, and they were all going to go. So I wasn't going to be the only person that didn't go zip lining, but I thought I was going to die. But I conquered my fear, and it was super fun. And there's a video to prove it. I actually did it multiple times because it was like a whole course. So that was a fear that I faced. And a fear that I probably still need to face would be like something to do with like reptiles. Like, I don't like people that like put like a snake over them.
I would pay money for you to have a snake around.
You and Kyle both.
Yeah, that's going to be something Kyle and I, you know, we are announcing Teach Better Conference 2022 details, like, I don't know, sometime kind of soon. And maybe we should have like a reptile section of the conference so you can master this fear with our entire Teach Better family together. How's that sound?
No, thank you. I'll pull the baby card. I'll just always be holding Lily, and I'll be like, "Well, no, I can't have the reptiles near the baby."
Yeah, if you're in the comments right now, we want to hear your biggest fear, and we want to see if we should incorporate that fear into the Teach Better conference.
Megan, you know.
I won't lie. I like don't do well with creepy crawlies, like spiders. I mean, like that feels typical. I'm trying to think of like other, like heights of course. I think that's a typical, like, I think I'm pretty predictable. Like Ray doesn't like heights, doesn't like spiders, doesn't like anything unexpected. It's
kind of, okay.
Yeah. Okay. It's also National Gumbo Day for those of you who enjoy a good, bowl of gumbo, and pulled pork day. So we're just going to go all out. I can't eat either of those foods. Because
I was going to say, Ray, but are you going to try some pulled pork?
I don't think so. Pulled pork and gumbo. I don't, both of those have like pork in them. But I hope that all of you like eat a bite for me today, because that would be wonderful. National Savings Day. I don't know if that means I shouldn't go shopping later today, but I'm not making any promises. It's World Arthritis Day. So that's really good to acknowledge that that's constantly something that they are doing research to support. And then really interesting, there's a Hindu holiday today that I apologize. I'm confident that I'm going to pronounce incorrectly. I hope somebody corrects me either in the comments or just direct message me. I'd love to learn more about this topic, but it's, oh my gosh, now that I'm on camera, you know, I'm going to say it wrong. And I practice it twice in front of you.
You got
Mahaswetami. It is celebrated every year on the seventh day of the waxing moon. It's a Hindu calendar month, and it falls this year on October 12th. It's a great ceremony. It's going on now. Hold on, I'm trying to get through what it's about. It takes place with great fanfare and celebrates 10 armed goddesses and her victory. So again, it goes along with a Hindu story of this time in history. And obviously, you guys know that nationaltoday.com kind of goes through not only what holidays are, but how to celebrate, where these come from. This was the first historic record of the celebration of this incredible Hindu holiday happening today. Happened in the 1500s. So this is very, very historical. And then how to observe. There's a festival, taking time to reflect, or worshiping different goddesses in the Hindu faith is something that we should look into. So anyway, something to know. I always love to learn about different, you know, people's celebrations, and always good to know when you're, you know, that you might have a student celebrating a holiday in your classroom that you are not familiar with. So very cool.
And how amazing if you did bring that up, they would be like, wait, what? You know about that? Like, they always get excited.
Well, there's so many different ways to bring in this information just to educate our communities. We've been talking about reading and writing. What a good bell ringer today to kind of go into some of the different things that people right now are celebrating, reading. I mean, this is obviously a story of an incredible goddess that they, you know, is part of their history. I mean, that would just be so cool to be able to bring into the conversation. We also have a good news story, Andrea, and I picked this one special for you because I just feel like you should be on this list. But I grabbed a story that just came out from today.com, and they're taking kind of a pulse right now. It's October 12th. We're looking at 21 historic firsts for women in 2021. So in 2021, although we've had a wacky year and so many people have just shared that this year has been harder than last year, especially in the classroom and everything in between, these are historic firsts that have happened this year specifically with women. So I think we should go over a few. And I think you guys are going to be very familiar with a lot of these. One is Kamala Harris. So she was, you know, took the oath of office as our vice president. She was sworn in as the first vice president. And, you know, as with her background, she has a wonderful background of being Black and South Asian American. And so her holding that position was obviously an enormous deal. Jill Biden was also somebody who marked the first female, first lady, but she is a doctorate in education. And so she is making first like crazy. She has continued to keep her role in the university over there, and she continues to do work in education, which is super interesting. Sarah Thomas, not the one that we know in education, but one here, became the NFL's first permanent female goal official. So she is there doing incredible things. Simone Biles, obviously known as the GOAT of gymnastics. She went through so many different firsts this year, one of which is she did a double pike on the vault during a U.S. Classic. That was the first time in history. Chloe Zhou is on Oscar night. She had a bear-breaking night where she was one of the first nominees to who had her background. She was a 29-year-old writer, editor, and producer of a number of different shows that took home awards. And only the second woman in all of these 93 years as a woman of color who was able to win an award. So there are so many. There are 21 different women who have made history this year. And while I could go through this whole list, I encourage you all to go to today.com. I think that could be a really incredible bell ringer or discussion today to look at the history that is being made, the positive history being made in this world by women. So it's kind of interesting.
Yeah, I love that you brought just the positive part in general, right? Because it's easy to look at 2020, 2021 as being just these negative, terrible years, but there's still so much positivity when you look at other aspects of it. And the fact that when women are breaking so many barriers and breaking through those glass ceilings is really
being able to highlight all these different areas. I mean, these are women all across the world that are making history in all different areas, even just the ones that we mentioned. There was politics and gymnastics and movies and all the, sports. I mean, these are all different spaces that you can bring in and do reflection with students. So very cool. Good news article this morning. We encourage you to go check that out at today.com and hopefully share that as a fun fact, but also as a little bit of positivity that even through these very challenging times, there continues to be incredible moments of celebration. And we're happy to be able to bring that to all of you on the Daily Drop-In. Andrea, any final thoughts for today? It's Tuesday. We're heading into a long day. Some of people in the Midwest are experiencing some icky weather, but still, this is going to be the best Tuesday yet. So any food for thought that you want to challenge our listeners to consider?
Just try something new today. It doesn't have to be mastery learning, but just challenge yourself to try something new. Take that one thing that maybe you've been kind of mulling over in your head, like maybe I should try that, maybe, I don't know. Just do it today. What's the worst that can happen? Just give it a try. We are here to help you. There's something that you need some support with, please drop us a message, put a post in the Facebook group or tag us on Twitter. We'd love to hear about it.
So true. And it can be teeny tiny. It doesn't have to be some massive thing. Just try something teeny tiny today to keep your brain fresh. Hopefully, and we'd love to hear about how that went. So love it, Andrea. Thank you for coming live with me on Daily Drop-In. I know we were all over the place with stuff that we could talk about, but I really appreciate you sharing your expertise and your insight. And obviously everyone can stay connected to you on Twitter or by connecting with you via the Teach Better team. Obviously your email is just andrea@teachbetter.com. So everybody can reach out and stay connected with you too. So thanks for coming live with me.
Thank you for having me.
So fun. For everyone else, we wish you a wonderful rest of your Tuesday. Please enjoy your last sip of coffee and make sure that you take care of yourself. We know that every single day is an opportunity for us to positively impact students, and we can't wait to hear what small little new thing you choose to implement and reflect on as you continue to bring incredible opportunities to your students' lives. So thank you for all that you do. In case nobody told you bright and early this morning, we appreciate you. And we will see you again live for Daily Drop-In tomorrow morning with Paul. All right, bye guys.
Bye.